Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We Need the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And the announcement of the day is that Sheriff Pasenko, who actually lives in Idaho now, sent me a text a little while ago and wanted me to wish Bill a happy birthday, at which point I said, holy crap, it's Bill's birthday. what a horrible wife I am.
Best birthday ever. No recognition. I like it.
Thank goodness somebody who doesn't even live here.
There comes a point in your life where birthdays need to be just kind of quieted down a little bit, you know?
Yeah, well, it's real quiet today.
Yeah, like, that's
super,
good. That's
super
good.
Quiet birthday today.
Really nice. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Loser.
Yeah.
So, sorry about that. Usually we forget our anniversary. We're really bad at that.
We're both bad at it, so that...
So it comes out okay.
Yeah, it comes out okay.
But now the birthdays are going.
Because the question usually is, hey, was yesterday our anniversary? It's like, I think it was. I have to go look.
It's the worst. We have a quilt with it. My sister had it. Put on this quilt. We have to run downstairs and go look, idiots.
Yeah, just to verify it.
Yeah. You can use a calendar, I suppose. That seems a little too hard. So, yeah, now that I've publicly apologized, I feel so much better. So, today we're mixing it up today. We're doing several things. So, we're going to chat with Jessica and Edward regarding wolves for about, I don't know, 20 minutes or something. We're doing that. Then we're going to kick over to Braden Sorbo. And I guess, too, the topics really are not that disparate. So we have Embracing Masculinity, Lifting Men Up in a World That Pushes Them Down is the name of his book. So, this problem is going to be taken care of by people who think like that. Not the people who zip their pants on the side, right?
Maybe we can get rid of all those skinny jeans, the chick pants that guys wear.
Can we say chick pants?
No, I think we can say chick pants.
We could say chick pants. So, I thought we would start with the propaganda, because the wolf propaganda is really, really loud. And I don't even remember what year this video came out, but it's just insanely annoying, and it's just like part and parcel of the kind of stuff that people are told, and so they, you know, kind of fall for the magic of the wolves, and the reality on the ground is anything but magic. So we will hear from them after we do. Let's do the propaganda at the beginning. Can we do that, David? Are we good? Nice. So you should probably have a seatbelt on for this, or a barf bag maybe. This will be like one of those rides where you just hope it ends. It's not that long, but be prepared. Here we go.
One of the most exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life to many others. Before the wolves turned up, they'd been absent for 70 years. That the numbers of deer, because there was nothing to hunt them, had built up and built up in the Yellowstone Park, and despite efforts by humans to control them, they'd managed to reduce much of the vegetation there to almost nothing. They'd just grazed it away.
Oh my God.
But as soon as the wolves arrived, even though they were few in number, they started to have the most remarkable effects. First, of course, they killed some of the deer, but that wasn't the major thing.
No.
Much more significantly, they radically changed the behavior of the deer. The deer started avoiding certain parts of the park to places where they could be trapped most easily, particularly the valleys and the gorges. And immediately, those places started to regenerate. In some areas, the height of the trees quintupled in just 6 years. Bare valley sides quickly became forests of aspen and willow and cottonwood. as soon as that happened, the birds started moving.
Oh, wow.
The number of songbirds and migratory birds started to increase greatly. The number of beavers started to increase because beavers like to eat the trees.
Oh.
And beavers, like wolves, are ecosystem engineers. They create niches for other species.
Niches.
And the dams they built in the rivers provided habitats for otters and muskrats and ducks and fish and reptiles and amphibians.
Mastodons.
The wolves killed coyotes. And as a result of that, the number of rabbits and mice began to rise, which meant more hawks, more weasels, more foxes, more badgers.
More weasels, all
ravens
right.
And bald eagles came down to feed on the carrion that the wolves had left.
Everybody knows
bears
hawks
fed
eat badgers.
Too, and their population began to rise as well, partly also because there were more berries growing on the regenerating shrubs. And the bears reinforced the impact of the wolves by killing some of the calves of the deer.
Of course they did.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Uh-huh.
The wolves changed...
Yeah, get ready for it.
...the behavior of the rivers.
Wow. Who knew?
They began to meander less. There was less erosion.
Was
the channels
meandering.
Narrowed.
No,
more pools
meandering.
Formed.
Well,
more riffle sections, all of which were great for wildlife habitats. The rivers changed in response to the wolves. And the reason was that the regenerating forests stabilized the banks so that they collapsed less often, so that the rivers became more fixed in their course. Similarly, by driving the deer out of some places and the vegetation recovering on the valley sides, there was a soil erosion because the vegetation stabilized that as well. So the wolves, small in number, transform not just the ecosystem of the Yellowstone National Park, this huge area of land, but also its physical geography.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Oh, David, make it end. I don't think we can hear anymore. If people haven't thrown up by now, there's no hope for them.
That
was your birthday present, by the way.
Oh, I appreciate that because it reinforces
spoiler
two things.
Spoiler alert.
It reinforces two things. Number one, misinformation is
with
alive and well.
With music behind it.
With
is
music.
Even, and
oh,
an accent.
It's epic. Okay.
And an accent.
The second thing is, if you pass your misinformation on in an English accent, because everybody knows if you do it in an English accent, it sounds much more intelligent.
Yeah.
This proves that the English accent can really make you sound like an idiot.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is over the top idiot.
Have you
idiotic.
Ever heard that?
Many times.
Yeah, I've probably played it for you.
You know, and my opinion of it hasn't changed a bit.
So, David, are our guests in here? Are they trapped in the cone of silence?
Yes.
They're probably unconscious. Hi, you guys.
Yes, we are.
Was that just like the most disgusting thing you've ever heard in your whole life?
Uh-oh,
you're breaking up bad.
Oh, bad connection there.
Is it still bad?
Oh, no, it's good for you.
Well,
how about me?
Oh, now you're back.
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, this is the kind of stuff, and Jessica and I were subjected to this years ago. What, 2011? Maybe?
Yeah, about right. Mm-hmm.
Way back when the magical wolf tour first began, and they started pitching all the, you know, how great it was going to be, and there weren't going to be that many, and no humans were ever going to see them, and
yeah, about 2% of that has a little truth tied to it. The other 98% is all bunk.
Yeah,
well, it reminds me of the cow that cried wolf. It was fake moose. Okay, that was for your birthday.
I like.
Oh, thank you.
Everything bad that happens is for Bill's birthday. I should have gotten him a real present. That's a good one, though. I've got to do a show like that because we had Silence of the Cows. That was our early show.
I love it.
Remember that one with Professor Williams? He did a study up at Oregon State University, and we called that one the Silence of the Cows.
He was very good.
He was super. And you know, we had spoken on the phone earlier that we really had to give a shout-out to posthumously to Bert Holthauser, great American who lived in Siskiyou County up by Doris. And he was really like the town crier on this. You know, he was really concerned with the overpopulation of elk up there and what are they up to? And, you know, and people blew him off.
Oh, definitely. They thought he was just being a conspiracy theorist, but all the elk were brought in. They weren't given out of the numbers.
Yeah, we're losing you again.
Darn it, you're like cutting out really bad. I don't know why.
Should we hang up and have him try to call back again?
Well, you know, we only have him for another 5 minutes or so, and then we're going to take a weird giant break and then come back with Braden, and then you guys are going to call us back at 1. So between here and there...
If you're on speakerphone, try turning it off.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not.
Okay. Oh, there. Now you're pretty good.
Is that okay on my end?
Yeah, you sound fine. It's the magic of...
We're having a big storm over here, so...
Yeah, we...
I think the weather is kind of screwing it up.
That could be it. It'll come and go. We'll survive. But yeah, way back when, that was the big conspiracy theory. It was like, oh, they're letting all these elk overpopulate, and they're going to bring in wolves. And it was like, okay, you know, you're a lunatic. And then pretty soon... It was the stakeholder meetings with the wolf, you know, with Center for Biological Diversity and I don't know, who were some of those other people? There were a lot of them, though. I just remember Karen with Fish and Game. And they just kind of, well, you know, we're just planning just in case. Remember that? There were no wolves and hadn't been in California for, I don't know, it was over 100 years, I think, at that point. And then they started talking about, oh, we're planning just in case. Remember that? Just in case.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, yeah, just in case. I bet it's not just in case. So Edward, over on your side of the Northern California geography there, did you guys even hear about this way back then?
We never heard nothing about it, because a bunch of us actually feel bad we didn't jump up and help our neighbors in Siskiyou County, and where you guys in Romalfa's and you guys was actually trying to help everybody about this issue. We never heard nothing about it. It was silent.
Isn't that handy, right? Don't make a widespread, don't involve people on a widespread basis, so then, well, shoot. You know, we were just a... I don't know. We had some fairly significant size groups. We had Jim Beers, who was a retired Fish and Wildlife. He came and spoke. We had the guy that wrote The Real Wolf. That is for anybody who really does want to know what's going on, The Real Wolf is a great book, and it's an easy read. It's well researched. And Ted Lyon, the author of that book, came out and spoke. But yeah, I just always hear Bert's voice in the back of my head all the time with this, and I'm like, it's probably best he's not here to see what happened, because everything he thought was going to happen did. So
very true, very true. And we tried to get Klamath County involved, but they thought the wolf thought that, you know, he wouldn't cross the state line. They found out different.
Yeah. Well, with a little hazing. I mean, I heard from people over and over and over that, you know, there were helicopters and ATVs chasing OR7, because he was the wolf back then, pushing him over the line and pushing him over the line. And then he would, yes, we've had a sighting. And then he'd go back into Oregon. And then, all of a sudden he'd magically arrive in California again. And then my phone would blow up. We saw him again. They were running the helicopters and the ATVs. And, of course, to this day, there's, you know, that's a lie. Well, it's funny. It was a lie that happened in real time, so.
Absolutely.
About like in Lassen County, they just conveniently had a camera set by the den of a female and some pups that came out of nowhere, so. Some very interesting things.
Yeah, now they're just arriving, and them getting a lot of calls about helicopters and what are these helicopters doing. And I did have one person. I really have to find them again, and I honestly cannot remember who told me this, but there are boxes, you know, out there, like, I don't know, the kind of boxes you raise large animals in, kind of, they were camouflaged back in like a canyon in the woods. And they stumbled across them, and it's like, these are like wolf dens. But why would they go back in there if they weren't raised in captivity? Because wolves don't live in breeding boxes, so that seemed weird.
What about the California Wolf Center, Aaron? What do you know about them?
Yeah. Oh, good. David just gave me the break signal. So we'll let people's we'll let people's blood pressure go down. We're going to reconnect with you guys in about a half an hour. Actually, a little bit longer at 1 o'clock, and we'll pick this up for the next hour. But the propaganda's out of the way, and now we can talk about what's happening on the ground, because you guys can be our reporters on the ground and let us know how it's actually affecting people, because that's only going to increase, the effects of that are only going to increase. Jessica, Edward, back to the cone of silence for you. And now we take a break in honor of Bill's birthday.
Oh, thank you. Killing me.
Now I can't forget. Couldn't remember, now I can't forget. We will we'll come right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the man song.
He's the man. He's the man.
I don't take no crap from anybody else but you. I wear the pants around here when I finish with your laundry. Cause I'm a guy you don't want to fight. When I say jump, you say you're right. I'm the man of this house until you get home.
He's the man. He's the man.
What I say goes around here, right out the window. And I don't want to hear a lot of whining, so I'll shut up. The sooner you learn who's boss around here, the sooner you can give me my orders, dear. Because I'm head honcho around here, but it's all in my head.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I can have sex anytime that you want. Because I'm a man who has needs, but they're not that important. And don't expect any flowers from me, because if I'm not mistaken, you prefer jewelry. I'm the king of my castle when you're not around.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I'll drink and watch sports whenever I want to get in trouble. And I'll come home when I'm good and ready to sleep on the couch. Because a man's got to do what a man's got to do. And I'm going to do what you tell me to. Because I'm top dog around here, but I've been neutered.
He's the man. He's the man.
You the man.
So we're shifting from the topic of wolves to, and we're coming back to that, by the way, but we're going to take a little break here with our new best friend. We're so fickle. Our new best friend is Braden Sorbo. He is the author of Embrace Masculinity, Lifting Men Up in a World That Pushes Them Down. I'd say this is a fairly timely release. Braden is a 23-year-old actor, author, and cultural commentator with over 2 million social media followers. How you doing on that, Bill?
I'm doing all right so far. I don't even hear anything about chick bands.
Are you competing with Braden on that one? Yeah, yeah. Probably not. From touring the country speaking on dangers of social media to championing, easy for me to say, traditional values, personal responsibility, and character. I mean, how great is this, right? No one's talking about these things. Braden's sharp wit, bold perspective, and unfiltered truth have positioned him as one of the most influential voices of his generation. And you know what? People think everyone in their 20s doesn't know what's going on. Change our minds, Braden.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me.
Hello.
I'll work on my best. I'll do. I can't promise I'm successful, but you know, it depends on how open people are.
Well, obviously we're complete goof offs, so we're super open. But I really liked the title of your book when AJ sent that out, and they said, oh, you know, anybody want to interview the author? I'm like, we do. We do. This is a topic that needs to be told.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be talking about it. Like you said, it is a very important topic, and unfortunately, you know, I wish more people were talking about it. It's a shame that I had to write this book in the first place.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. It does seem a little, I mean, like, why would that be a bad thing? But I do remember, oh man, it was probably 2019, I guess, we did a Father's Day show with my dad and just talked all about men and like how great it was, you know, for dads and all that stuff, because that was really at the height of the men are horrible, you know. So you were...
No, I do, and it's a shame that that's how society's gone in terms of the direction that we've decided to treat literally half the population. You know, I mean, it used to be more back, kind of in the background with how they did it with movies and television. You know, making the dad this lumbering, kind of cumbersome idiot who's just in the background, and he was someone that everyone could sort of laugh at and ha ha, look what the joke he is. He's not really important. He's not necessarily relevant. And we've unfortunately shifted into this kind of idea that not only are fathers or men in society these kind of idiotic, kind of lumbersome people, but more so that they're irrelevant and even replaceable. You know, we've switched from this mentality that men are useless to men are dangerous, men are toxic, men are manipulative, men are controlling, men are obsessive, and it's sort of alienated half the generation. I mean, we saw it with how these young men, especially with my generation, reacted during the election cycle, how they're leaning more into traditional values, how they're returning to faith, how they're kind of going against all of the things that the status quo has done, and there's a reason for that. It's because we're fed up. We're sick and tired of how society has essentially been pushing men out of the picture, pushing them down. I mean, the fourth wave of feminism that we're on, it used to be the third wave was women are stronger than men, and now the fourth wave with men being in women's sports is women are men.
At some point,
you know.
I mean, yeah, I'm afraid to even goof off with like what could come after that, because that's true. Like we were before the program, we were kind of laughing. It's way before your time, but I'm sure you've seen it. Klinger, the guy who was in MASH, he used to dress like an old lady and carried a purse and wore like a little Sunday bonnet, and he was trying to get out on a mental. Out of the army.
Oh, I know them so well.
Yeah.
I grew up on MASH and Gilligan's Island and Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie. My truck is named Jeannie because I dream of her. That's what I like to tell people. You know, I grew up on all of those, and that used to be a joke, and today, I mean, I don't think a show could get away with doing that because they'd get canceled for making fun of it.
But the thing is, it wouldn't be funny. I mean, you couldn't...
Yeah.
It wouldn't be funny. Now he would be a character. Like, he would be...
Be serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would be an actual character.
Yeah, what would be funny about that?
Before he was a, quote, character.
And if anyone were to try to make a joke about it, they would get canceled.
Well, then there's that. And so on the acting side, you were in the Left Behind?
I was.
And so how was that? Because, you know, our experience with Hollywood is zero. And so, like, from your... How old were you when you were doing that?
I gotta say, maybe I was 20 years old at that point, maybe almost 21.
Okay.
That was my seventh or eighth movie. I've done 11 to date. My latest I did a year ago is called I Feel Fine, and that one's actually streaming now. We were up for a couple awards. It's a drama, deals with suicide, and then Left Behind was the most recent major one before that I did in theaters. And so I've had a little bit of experience in the Hollywood world, but not necessarily on the big major motion picture sets because I just won't conform to the status quo that they have. And so I've been blessed to be able to work in the independent film industry, which I can say is significantly more accepting. You know, for an entire corporation, or I guess, you know, multiple corporations, to preach this whole idea of tolerance and loving diversity, they're not very diverse in their thoughts. And so, therefore, they're not very accepting in their groups. And so I've never necessarily been, you know, part of those movies solely because of my political stances. You know, I'm very outspoken online, and so there have been acting, you know, the managers, agents, and casting directors who have all told me, it's like, yeah, if you weren't, you know, outspoken,
if you were just somebody else, we would love to hire you.
Do you see that changing at all? I mean, is it kind of swinging the other way now in Hollywood, or are they still steadfast in their opinions of that?
Oh man, you know, Hollywood is they're just so far gone. I think we really saw it. You guys are aware of the newest Snow White movie with Rachel.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
It bombed. It was a $300 million budget minimum because they had to go back and reshoot it after the first time. And it made $50 million in its first 2 weeks. Most movies tend to at least break even in their first couple weeks, especially with the Hollywood budgets that they have on promotion. I mean, all of the Marvel movies typically make over $1 billion. They spend $300 million, but they triple their profit, the revenue, you know? So it's like, when that movie bombs and the next one bombs and the next one bombs, maybe they'll start to learn. But they have an endless supply of money and enough people who are following what they are saying that will just sort of eat up whatever, that it doesn't really matter to them. That's the thing, is they
don't care. That's the really terrifying part.
But even politically, I mean, some of these actors got scorched in this last election and just have gone into, I won't say they've gone into hiding, but they're keeping a very low profile because of their outspoken views that just didn't fly. So I would just curious, do you think they're going to change their ways, or do you think these independent studios are going to see kind of a comeback?
The independent studios will definitely see a comeback. I mean, Angel Studios is the first one to really experience that major breakthrough.
And they're putting out some great stuff.
They're putting out some high-budget, like, actually well-produced. You know, that was the problem with the independent film world, was we just couldn't compete. And it wasn't until, you know, God's Not Dead in, what, 2014
something,
that it really kind of catapulted the independent world into the mainstream. And that's when people started to go, okay, you know, maybe these guys can actually make movies. And so it's because of, I want to give credit to God's Not Dead, because it's because of that movie, essentially, on a $2 million budget, made $140 million worldwide.
Wow.
I mean, that's unprecedented.
I forgot about that. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
You're right.
It was. And it's because of that movie and a few others like it around that time that the independent film industry really got some legs to stand on. And so I see more companies like Angel Studios taking the reins. I mean, my family, we have Sorba Studios, and we did Left Behind. We're working on the next one right now. We have more that we plan on releasing down the pipeline, and it's just a matter of time, because more people, like you said, are getting sick and tired of Hollywood, which means the money is going elsewhere. And so it is only a matter of time before a funder comes along and goes, you know what? I could spare a couple $1 million towards a project that actually has good morals, that actually has value, that I can get behind, that I would want my kids to see and my grandkids to see. You know, I mean, these people are so sick and tired of it that they're slowly turning around and realizing that some steps need to be taken. But I will say, in terms of the actors in Hollywood, like you mentioned, there's a lot of them getting scorched right now. There are more conservative actors than people realize. I mean, my dad and I were just at a convention with a bunch of actors, and we had, out of maybe 15 or 20 celebrities at the show, we had 7 or 8 come up to us and go, hey man, we're on the same side. We're just, you know, not as outspoken.
We're just hiding.
We don't want to lose our career. I know. And they're like, thanks for being a voice for us. And I'm looking at them going, be a voice for yourself. We don't need us.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting that they're willing to kind of hand that over to, you know, hey, thanks for carrying the water. I'll be hiding in the back if you need anything. I mean, that's pretty telling.
It's not very ballsy, you know. I can say that there are people that I know who play pretty manly characters on the screen who I've unfortunately had to lose respect for because of the way that, you know, they act behind the camera, where it's just, oh, well, I would rather not, you know, risk lose the money. And I'm going, if the money is more important to you than actually getting a precedent for your values, I feel like you need to get your orders, you know, everything aligned, and you're kind of out of whack right now.
Yeah. Yeah, in a big way. Well, it's interesting because you felt compelled to write a book about this. So let's, like, talk a little bit about that. I didn't catch the article in time to actually do much reading on the book, and it comes out, it's not out yet, right?
It's It's available right now on
I think it's today or something.
com. Yes. So we will officially
happy birthday, Bill.
Very soon. I know, it's a perfect birthday gift.
Isn't it? Bill's not going to get cheated after all. His lousy wife can finally get him a gift he'll like.
Hey, well, he can get it signed, too. I'll be shipping out the copies in the next couple
My
of weeks.
God, a lot of Braden, you've done. Just saved God you've bless. Just saved me. You're man, you're all kinds of all right today.
but, well, I'm glad I could help.
Yeah, yeah. It's God knows. I
well, didn't the last... James Bond or 007 movie, didn't they script a woman for that?
What?
Yeah, they did. They did bring a woman in for that. So I tried to get her endorsement because I figured she would be the pinnacle of masculinity, but I ended up changing my mind because that wouldn't work.
I said to myself, "Self,
well, really gets back to what you were saying. I mean, everything is women can do it better now, and men are, just kind of push them off to the side, and they can be secondary.
Well, look at all the crime. Look at all the different crime shows and stuff. All the, the lead investigators, the boss of the agencies, whatever
it is. Oh, yeah, the smartest people in the room are always women. I mean, you'll have four or five women and one guy, and he'll be kind of a tag on.
Kind of a goof. He's a goofball. He doesn't necessarily help too much. The woman has to stop him from tripping over his own feet so that she can save the day.
Exactly.
And, back, again, the things that were kind of funny back then, Get Smart was like that,
Yes.
He was kind of a dope, and 99 was really the brains of the operation, but 99 was like, oh, Max, you're like the best agent ever. And so she always kind of propped him up, which I'm sure is heresy now. But it's interesting to me that we used to have that range, right? We had actors that were, big and tough and all that. And then we had the Maxwell Smart character who was really a dum-dum who was propped up by a woman. But overall, it was for fun. It was for fun.
Especially in the movie industry, you always had the leading man, Cary Grant, and they kind of carried the show, and they've really, like you were saying, have really
we've just scripted them out. So from your perspective, so when did you start noticing this? Actually,
I would say that I started noticing it just in my high school years. I kind of was paying attention a little bit more to politics and to the trends of the time. And I was just seeing all of these things sort of taking place like dominoes falling. And as you watch the next domino fall, you know where that it's going to go. You can follow the track. And so I just started noticing more and more this attack, essentially, from the left on men. And I saw the end of the track, and I'm going, this is not going to end well. Because either the men will fall and society collapses, or the men will push back, and it's going to be messy. Right, and so we thankfully got the second option. Unfortunately, it's going to be a little bit messy, but the men are pushing back. I write actually in the book that it's not a matter of, the chapter 3 is titled The War Between the Patriarchies, and I write, it's not a matter of if a man is going to be leading society one way or another, but it's a matter of whether or not that man's going to be good or bad. That's what's important. Are we going to have someone who is good or bad, who is kind of the front line of our society? And what we've had for the longest time are these bad men over and over and over again. And so I described that there's different ways that bad men will use their power. Because every bad ruler sees other men as a threat to his rule.
Oh,
he
makes
knows
sense.
That at the drop of a hat, those men can revolt and overthrow him. And so he takes measures, he puts measures in place to prevent that from happening. The first way is by pacification, right? He's going to use bread and circuses, and they'll all get along because they don't see a reason to revolt because they're all happy, their stomachs are full, they're content with life, no reason to revolt. Eventually, some people start waking up from that. So the next step that a ruler is going to take is he's going to use subjugation. He's going to enslave the men. You got to think back to, ancient Egypt during the Exodus in the Bible when the Israelites were enslaved and they were forced to build the pyramids, and all that stuff. So the Pharaoh, he saw the men as an evil reign or as a threat to his rule. And so he enslaved them. He used their power because he could harness it. I mean, why wouldn't you, right? If you have the power to build pyramids and you can keep them in check, you may as well. Eventually, the Pharaoh realizes that, the men might actually rise up and revolt against him if there are too many. So he starts going, all right, it's time to kill all the little baby boys. That's the plan, is we're going to kill them, which is the final step. If you can't subjugate, if you can't make them passive, you have to kill them. That's it. And what we have today in society in 2025 is we are on that third step. And you might be going, well, Braden, okay, people aren't being just like gunned down in the streets. But in some countries, yes, they are.
Yeah.
But in other countries, we have pornography, which kills the soul and kills the drive of any man.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the man is essentially spiritually dead, which makes him physically incompetent. And so these men are not striving for anything. They're not aiming to do better. Because it used to be 100 years ago, a man would work on himself. He would essentially build up his worth to make himself worthy of a good woman to have kids with and to protect and to raise a family with. Nowadays, because we've destroyed the family unit, men aren't looking because they can find porn online. They get that sexual satisfaction, you know, fulfilled with a person on a screen. So they don't have a reason to build their worth up for women. Women, a lot of the time, they're also giving themselves to men, so they don't have to actually work for anything. You know, you could download a dating app and have someone come to your house to hook up with instead of actually spending time getting to know them and buying them a ring. You know, we've devalued what sex is in the society to the point where people are just hooking up. So men don't have to actually strive for anything greater in order to get the one thing that they truly desire. Speaking as a guy, you know what I mean? I speak from experience. That's pretty much all we want is we want a family and a wife. But if we can get all of the wife, you know, benefits without actually having to support a wife, men who are not, you know, built up on a foundation of morality, they're going to take advantage of that system. But
yeah,
in doing so and taking advantage of that system, they end up putting themselves out of the race. They're no longer a threat to the patriarchy, to the bad society or the bad government that's in place. And so that's been the most destructive factor, without a doubt, which has been the reason I wrote the book. I saw the detriment of pornography on society and its effects long term, and it compelled me to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, and then correspondingly, they've convinced women that they don't need men. Men are superfluous, and...
Well, they just announced, I don't know, last week I heard a story about the declining birth rate in the United States, and we're on a course right now of collapse.
Oh, we're screwed.
Yeah, yeah, we are. We've got to get that rate back up.
Although I did hear a generational historian some years back, and she was very interesting. So this is probably 5 years ago, and she was speaking about your age group. So while you were in high school, she was kind of predicting the future. And her assessment and the people who determine, you know, who's called baby boomers, who's called a millennial, when does that start, when does that stop, she's part of that, I don't know, star chamber, I guess, that figures that out. And she had said that the 20-somethings would create the largest population boom in history. So your generation is set to have the most children that will far surpass like the baby boomers.
We're working on it, but I will say it's going to be tough. And the reason why is because we also, in this generation, have the biggest divide politically than ever before. This isn't even like comparable to any other generation we've had. That's why young men voted historically red and young women voted historically blue. But the difference is this past election, the divide was bigger than ever. We had the number one voter issue for young women was abortion, guised under health care. And I was just at a pro-life summit, and one of the speakers made a great point. His name was Nick Freitas. He was a representative in the House of Representatives in Virginia, I believe. And he said that men have always wanted the benefits of sex without the risk of getting pregnant, because they can't get pregnant, so it's totally fine. Women were the ones who had that barrier. They had that, the risk of getting pregnant off of a one-night stand lies on the woman, right, not the man. So the man can do that and leave. But women, they had that risk of pregnancy, and so it kept everything in check because the women kept the men in check. And the second the abortion law was passed and abortion became normalized and accepted in society, the checks and balances system blew out of place completely. And so the women were allowed to act like the men that they had condemned as bad under the guise of it being good. And so we're seeing in that society this generation, my generation, has returned to traditional religion more than any other. We have the largest rejuvenation within Catholic and Orthodox churches that we've ever had, essentially, at least in the history of America. We're getting staggering numbers. Whereas women are going to more Protestant mega churches like Joel Osteen kind of thing. And that gap, that divide, is dangerous. It does have the potential, if the men stick to the roots and lead properly, then the women, you know, that they end up marrying will follow properly. We have this sort of like family unit back together, cohesive, you know, working, solid, you know, unified, all of that amazing stuff. But that will all be on the men. It is entirely on the guys. And so I tell a lot of guys that I do a lot of public speaking, I tell the guys I speak to, you know, I say, you complain about not finding a good woman, but you're not worthy of a good woman. You need to make yourself worthy of a good woman before you're given one, essentially.
See, and that message. So, really, from the young men in your age group that I meet, I find that this has become a pretty common belief system, although you take a big departure from the folks 10, 15 years older than you are. I mean, this is a real shift. But do you find that you resonate with people your age pretty regularly, the male population?
I do personally, because I have the same experiences as them.
Yeah.
It's hard for someone who's 50, 60, even 35 years old to relate to a 23-year-old in the same way that I can. Because I can look there,
true,
and say, look, we were in high school at the same time. We were in middle school and elementary school at the same time. I have been through the exact same stuff that you are currently going through. And here's how I beat it. Here's how I got this. Here's how I fixed that. You know what I mean? So I can, I have this relatability, essentially, that a lot of the older generations don't. And while the older generations, like Jordan Peterson, bring up great...
Oh, yeah, I like him.
I'm not a psychologist, right? I don't have the brains that he does yet. He spent so many decades working on all of those things that I'm not there yet. And that's totally fine. I don't expect to be there yet. He's got, you know, eons of experience compared to me. But I have a different experience entirely because I've lived it, right? I mean, essentially, the battle that young men face today is harder than any other generation that they fought, that any other generation of men has had, simply because of our accessibility to the internet and the world at large.
Yeah.
No one has had this much power in the palm of their hand ever before. I have access to what kings could only dream of, you know, 500 years ago.
Yeah, true. True. And unfortunately, it's not always being used as the amazing tool that it is. A lot of times it's just a massive time waster and distraction, and I don't know. I'm hoping that this shifts around, because what I'm seeing, like, even at church, I notice there are a lot more little kids now than there have been in the last maybe 10 years. I mean, there are families that are big again. I'm the oldest of five kids. Bill's family was four kids. That kind of went away for a while, and it seems like that's kind of coming back. There's a resurgence there.
Yeah, there is, and that's what I'm looking forward to, and that's what I'm hoping we continue down the path of, because, like I said, the alternative is significantly worse. The alternative is inherently selfish, and like we mentioned earlier in the show, we are on a track to completely be overrun. We're not having enough children to supply, you know, to keep up with our country. And so because of that, people feel the need to import replacements, essentially, because they would rather not have children themselves. I told my dad, I said, it's interesting, as houses got bigger, families got smaller.
It's totally true.
You would think, my dad was the fourth of five kids. He grew up in a small, like, three-bedroom, two-bedroom house in Minnesota, you know, a family of seven. And here we have families living in two, three, four-bedroom houses, beautiful places, you know, and this obviously isn't everybody, but this is a lot of America today, having two kids, maybe, one or two, three at most. You know, I'm the oldest of three, and my parents regret it now. They wish that they had more, but they're stuck with the situation, you know. So it's interesting, as families got bigger, or as houses got bigger, families got smaller.
Well, and so you look at all the things that happened. Like, for us growing up, you know, we had one bathroom. Seven people were all trying to get to, you know, my dad was trying to get to the office. We had to get to school. And everybody had to get all their stuff done. There was a lot of negotiation that went on. And now there's a lot of, I mean, you know, people talk about being lonely. You know, these kids are lonely. And I'm thinking, we dreamt about loneliness. We didn't even know what it meant.
Another big factor is, when you look at our economy, it takes two people now to bring home enough money to really run a household, and before, usually the mom stayed home, the dad went out and worked, and you could raise a family, and everything was great. Well, you can't hardly do that in today's economy. Do you see that, or do you agree with that?
That's one of my biggest talking points, is the destruction of the nuclear family through what were deemed as rights violations by our government. We had a small subsection of government going, okay, we're only taxing half of the population. The children are being raised in a good home. How do we get a hold of and make money off the other half of the population? And so what they set out to do was convince the people of the time that their rights were being infringed upon, that the women didn't matter, that their vote didn't count, that they didn't even have a vote. And so they passed the 19th Amendment and effectively destroyed the cohesion and the unity of the family, because it used to be the family worked together. The husband, who was tasked with taking responsibility and protecting and providing for his wife and kids, would
right.
vote as one single family vote. He was the representative of his family, tasked with making sure that they were protected and provided for. And then the government said, oh, no, you are being oppressed. Let us take care of you. So they pulled the kids out of the house. And they started raising taxes. They started raising inflation. The first things that were passed after the 19th Amendment were passed were the beginning of the abortion laws, which what led to 1972 Roe v. Wade, Margaret Sanger, and credit scores. And so not only did abortion get passed in the sexual revolution, which has its major consequences that we're now reaping, unfortunately, begin back then, but also the current financial situation that many Americans find themselves in can also be directly linked back to that. So it's been in the works for a long, long time, and it has divided the family. And I look back on it almost sad, because it's like a zeitgeist. Like, I haven't been able to live that time myself, but I look back on it and wish I had. Because we had unity. We had people working together, right? We had people kind of leaning into their roles, this order that we have in the universe that is by no means bad, oppressive, or incorrect. And people have believed that lie for so long that convincing them otherwise, or opening their eyes even, is incredibly difficult. It's not impossible, but it is difficult.
Yeah. Tell me this. So in your family, I'm assuming this is all normal. This is all normal thought in your house.
Yeah, it took a little bit of time, because my parents were both public schooled. That's just how they were raised. But we were homeschooled, my siblings and I. My mom pulled me out in second grade, and she pulled my siblings out right after kindergarten. Though she could go back, she would start us in kindergarten in homeschooling. She wouldn't have put us in public school at all. But I was the guinea pig, being the oldest, and so I went all the way through graduation. Never went to college, and now I wrote my second book and have done 11 movies with 2 million followers, so I feel like this experiment turned out somewhat successful. But my siblings are both very talented in their own right. My brother is a model. He does a lot of runway shows like that, but also an engineer. The guy has a crazy mathematical mind that I simply can't comprehend, being the person who's better with words than I am with numbers. When I started adding letters to math, I just sort of gave up.
Yeah, I resemble that.
An artist. Yes.
Yeah.
And my sister is an incredibly talented artist, self-taught, right? So everyone has their own unique abilities, and homeschooling allows them to foster them and to water those plants, if you will, to allow it to grow. And so that's what we were given the ability to do. And I wish that for everybody. Now, it's not something that I understand, you know, I realize that a lot of people are going to struggle with that, especially because, like you said earlier, it takes two incomes now to really support a family. And so it is a sacrifice. It is incredibly difficult. And I want to be able to relate to the people who are listening to that who go, man, I would love to homeschool, but I can't because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, I promise that you can. There are ways. We have a friend of ours who works as an assistant at a place, and she convinced the boss to let her bring her 9-year-old daughter. And the 9-year-old daughter comes to work and does homeschooling stuff right next to her mom for the 7-8 hours that she's there. Right? It's much better than being stuck under fluorescent lighting with a teacher that doesn't care about you.
Yeah, and even if they do, you've got all the problems that go. I have two sisters, and one taught in private school, and one is currently teaching in public school. And the challenges that they both faced are wildly different.
Yeah.
And so we do need a place for all of the kids. But honestly, if you really want to focus your kids, that's a great way to do it. You know, to give them that ability. With all of this, where are you going to take, you know, where are you going to take this from here?
Well, I'm hoping to do much more public speaking. As much as I love acting, if given the opportunity to do either movies for the rest of my life or speak to the masses, I think I would prefer to speak to the masses. I would love to spread this message far and wide, and the best way that I see that possible, as much as I understand the value that the culture is impacted by entertainment, I find myself, if I end up getting married and having a family, I would find it difficult to leave them for months on end to film a project, and I would much rather be able to go speak at an event and come back to them quickly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That does make a lot of sense. I know we're going to run out of time here because we're going to get shanghaied by the news here pretty quick. But we've really enjoyed this. See, I knew we could talk for a lot longer, but time was of the essence. We hope you'll come back and speak with us again, because honestly, you have a terrific message, and we want to help you, you know, with your public speaking, because we're big fans.
Well, I appreciate
I'm
that.
A big fan of public speaking. I love public speaking. I think it's fantastic.
Well, you're very good at it, so I believe it.
Well, thank you very much.
And we'll highlight the book on the website.
Yep, it's on there.
Okay.
And our guest has been Braden Sorbo. And you're awesome, Braden. Thank you. You can find this commercial free later on today at wethepeopleradio.us.
I need a sign.